So when I record, I have the benefit of repeating it about 10 times each sentence and then putting them all together. So let's hope that I can just do it right the first time. So, a Christmas miracle. It was nearly Christmas. I was a teenager and my family had recently moved across the province. Dad was sick and unable to work, and Mom had just opened a Christian bookstore. Needless to say, money was scarce. Never had we lived so close to my grandparents. In less than an afternoon's drive, we could be there. Grandma and Grandpa had offered to pay our expenses for the trip, and we were filled with excitement until my dad dropped the bombshell. "We can't possibly go," he sadly announced. A chorus of dismays, whys, and how comes filled the room. Sadly, my dad explained that because it was desperately cold and with the lack of furnace oil, we could not leave our rented place unattended, even for a few days. With our funds so low, he had not been able to order more. He had managed to stretch what little we had by towing trees off the property with a snowmobile for firewood. However, the oil was now nearly gone, and when that ran out, which it certainly would, there would be no one at home to keep the fire going and the water lines would freeze. Sadness permeated the room and the tears trickled down cheeks. Mom busied herself in the kitchen and my sisters and I went to our rooms to nurse our disappointment. Minutes passed with Dad deep in thought. He then rose from his chair and said quietly to Mom, "Do you have an old rag? I will go and check the oil level one more time, and if by some miracle there's still enough oil in the bottom of the tank to run the furnace while we are away, we will go." Soon he poked his head back into the kitchen and asked Mom for another rag. More minutes ticked by, and there was Dad again at the door asking for yet another rag. Curiosity peaked, and Mom asked, "What are you doing?" In awe and disbelief, Dad told her that the hockey stick he had used to measure the level did not hit the bottom as expected. It had bounced back up and floated. The tank was nearly full. Tears of joy now filled my parents' eyes as they realized the miracle that had taken place. By then, we were all at the back door, and together we knelt while Dad prayed the prayer of thanksgiving. No one had known our need. There was no fresh tracks in the snow. No fuel truck could have delivered to our tank in the snowed-in backyard. Angels don't leave footprints.
Shepherds in the Fields by Mary Carlin. It was a quiet night near Bethlehem as shepherds watched their sheep. It was their job most every night while others got their sleep. Rams were munching in the field, a night breeze blew soft and warm. Ewes with their lambs were in the fold, shepherds keeping safe from harm. It was an ordinary night, just like any other, until they saw a bright light in the sky. They stared in wonderment and fear. Then to them an angel spoke nearby. "Do not fear. I bring good news for all. Christ Jesus the Savior has come down. He is newly born, laying in a manger, here in a stable in Bethlehem town." In praise to God and goodwill to all men, how exciting to hear hosts of angels sing. When they left, the shepherds exclaimed, "Let us go to Bethlehem to see the great King."
So we sit and sing Silent Night.
Holy infant, so tender and mild. Merry Christmas morning, everybody. Bats swirled around my head as I waited in the dark for the cows. They were headed my way, and I was supposed to head them off. His last words to me were, "Look out, they could run over you." How was I supposed to do that when they came charging my way? We had eagerly left home only an hour earlier for our first camp trip in 2 years. It was already late. The pressures of the work kept him there. Taking only an hour to prepare, we were off into the sunset. When we saw the cows, not ours, must have been 30 of them, just having a good time in our meadow. Cows are so stupid and so smart. They know where the holes are in the fence. They know how to avoid the chaser. They know where the good grass is, and they know they don't want to leave it. Here they came. I forgot about the bats. He was bouncing all over the meadow in the truck, honking and yelling and stirring up clouds of dust. Just as the wild cows were about to trample me, he was there heading them off. I was screaming at the top of my lungs and waving my arms wildly, and wonder of wonders, they actually went into the open gate. And I jumped to close it behind them. I glanced up, up. The stars were shining. They were looking up too, those wise men. The bats and darkness of the world didn't deter them. The Star of Angels was their focus. The soft glow of sunset was silhouetting the tall pines that ring the meadow. The serenity of the place returned. It helps to look up. Looking unto Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, Hebrews 12:2.
Happy Sabbath and Merry Christmas. Totally unrelated, I had a thought last night I did want to share with you. One of my favorite Christmas hymns is, "O Come All Ye Faithful." But aren't we blessed to have a God that doesn't just call the faithful? He calls everyone. I never thought of that before, but there's some group I don't remember their name, that sings a song that says, "Come all ye unfaithful." And I saw that and I'm like, but it ended up being a very good song. She dreamed of that Christmas for what seemed like forever. She and her brother would sit for hours poring over the Seer's wish book. Do you guys remember that? Page by page. And they'd go through it many times because they wanted to pick just the right gift to ask Santa for. By now, she knew the jolly old elf wasn't who her brother thought he was. She was so much wiser than he, being 2 years older. However, even after years of experience, she still started hoping this Christmas would be different as the decorations appeared on the homes around the town. You see, she'd grown up sometimes not knowing if there would be dinner that night. She was thankful when the farmers would share eggs and watermelon with her father when he made deliveries from work. Her Christmas wish did not come from that catalog, though. They enjoyed looking through it. Her wish for Christmas was for peace. Not for the world, though, but for her home. Her parents would spiral into angry outbursts because of their guilt, the guilt they felt not being able to give their children the Christmas they felt they should. Little did the parents realize that it wasn't the presents under the tree that the girl and her brother longed for most. She and her brother would come to associate Christmas with yelling, fighting, tears, and violence, all because of the lack of things. As much as they tried, the children could never be quiet enough or helpful enough to avoid the outbursts that would soon be aimed at them when the parents turned their own feelings of guilt into what they perceived as ungrateful children. Year after year, the family would dress up Christmas Eve and go to midnight mass, appearing to be the average happy family, but the children knew better. Why do I tell you such a sad story on this glorious Christmas morning? Because out of the darkness of that story rose hope. You see, these yearly lessons of what Christmas shouldn't be taught me instead to seek the peace of Christmas I spent my childhood hoping for. I now know what is important. Yes, we exchange gifts as we're able, but I've learned to appreciate each and every gift, no matter what, as a sign of the love given the giver has for me. It doesn't matter whether it was what I wanted or what I liked. The love it represented is the true gift. Too often, so much emphasis is placed on a single day. Everyone expecting that perfect courier and Ives. If there's younger people, you may not get that. Okay? Everyone expecting the perfect courier and Ives scene as the family gathers Christmas morning around the tree. And while the Scrooge of Christmas past may try to creep in, I remind myself of some of Scrooge's last words. I will honor Christmas in my heart and keep it all the year. Scrooge may not have understood exactly what I have learned. It's the daily celebration of Emmanuel, Christ with us, and the infectious desire to share that joy daily with those around us. Did I find the peace I hoped for as a child? I'd like to think so. As author Hellersteiner Rice said, peace on earth will come to stay when we live Christmas every day. Daily, we are given opportunities to give those around us to gift those around us with kind words of hope, love, and even material items at times. It is we follow God's example of gift-giving in his giving of his son to the world, we find peace, not in the lack of turmoil, but in its midst, God with us.
I was hoping that Dale would sing with me, but thankfully Dad is going to sing with me because Dale just doesn't sing much anymore. He sang a little bit at home, but someday, keep praying for him.
One star, one shining star. 'Twas a still night with one star
and its glow was bright as day. From the Orient it came afar to the manger where he lay. One star, one shining star in the heavens above, bearing glad tidings of everlasting love. And the star told of wondrous things, for the time was now at hand. 'Twas a child born, King of Kings, then rejoice through all the land. One star, one shining star in the heavens above, bearing glad tidings of everlasting love.
Then once more the star was gone to the east from whence it came. 'Tis a miracle to think upon.
Praise be his name. Will the great star shine again? Oh yes, the angels say, when there's peace on earth, goodwill to men, then the night will be as day. One star, one shining star in the heavens above, bearing glad tidings of everlasting love. One star, one shining star.
Hello, Merry Christmas. The Red Mittens, Hartley F. Daly. Oh, how often we judge a person by the mask, just as we do a house by its facade, and fail to see the treasure inside. There is no better master key than kindness. I think I really count my Christmases from the year Linda was 8. That is the year when peace on earth, goodwill to men, first began to mean something to me. That was in 1934, the worst year of the Great Depression. At least for farmers. Like many others, I had bought a quarter section, 160 acres, just before the market crash, and at much too high a price. Now, with farm prices at rock bottom, the prices of things we had to buy were rising. I took every cent we could scrap together just to pay the interest on the place. That was the year we decided we just couldn't afford to buy Christmas presents. For ourselves, Jane and I, we didn't mind. But for Linda, we felt differently. Our only child, she seemed almost a baby. She was a serious-minded little girl with a wealth of silky brown hair and a pair of enormous brown eyes, so warm they would have melted the heart of the legendary Snow Queen. We thought she was just too young to understand why there was no money to buy presents. There was a beautiful light blue coat, just Linda's size, in the window of Lloyd's department store in the country seat. Every time we'd go to town, she'd go and stare into the store window and see if it was still there. But the price was an impossible $12.95. It might as well have been $100. Jane went to great pains making a coat of her own to fit Linda, and she wore it dutifully, but it could not take the place of the one in Lloyd's window. In those days, our nearest neighbor was Old Man Riggs, whose 500 acres lay between our place and the river. Old Charlie Riggs was the stingiest man in 3 counties, with a disposition like a sour apple and an expression on his face that hinted his chief diet was unripe persimmons. He was, I always loved that line. He was reputed to have money, but you never would have guessed it. He dressed like a tramp, and he drove a broken-down old Model T. He never put side curtains on it, no matter how cold the weather. He sat bolt upright, his big, knobby hands holding the steering wheel with a grip like death. I never saw him wear a pair of gloves, not until that Christmas. One of the most pressing problems for a farmer in the hill country is water. If you don't have access to a spring or a stream, you must have deep wells to get it. And at the time, before electricity came to the hills, you pumped it by hand, and pumping all the water for all the animals on the farm is labor, indeed. I had been trying for years to negotiate a right-of-way across Old Man Riggs' place to the river. Here I was, spending half my time pumping water, while across the narrowest point in Riggs' place, 50 yards from my pasture, was a whole river full. And it wasn't as if he needed it. He had over a mile of frontage, and he wouldn't sell me an inch. As Christmas approached, Jane was busy going through the attic, picking out the things to make or remake, and for materials to decorate with. Linda was an interested spectator. Then one day she came to me with a suggestion. "I want to give Mr. Riggs a Christmas present," she said. I was thunderstruck, but I said, "What could you give Mr. Riggs, Linda?" "I'd have Mother make him some mittens, like she makes for me," came Linda's confident answer. "Why," I blurted, "the old man would be too stingy to wear them if you did." I saw at once that I had made a mistake, for Linda hung her pretty head and began making circles with her toe in a way she had. "Mr. Riggs is my friend," she said. "He lets me eat pears from the big tree in his yard." I wouldn't have been more surprised if she had said she had trained one of the local wildcats to catch mice in the kitchen. But knowing her as I did, I shouldn't have been surprised even at that. Myself, I would not have given the old tightwad the time of day from his old watch, but I couldn't deny Linda anything when she looked like that. Besides, I saw the hand of Jane in this, for Jane, the gentlest and sweetest of women, had an iron will that brooks no opposition in such matters. I went down on my knees beside Linda and took her into my arms. "Ah, honey," I told her, "if you want to give Mr. Riggs some mittens, you go right ahead." Every winter, Jane made several pairs of zero mittens for me. These were mittens cut from the best parts of my worn-out overalls and lined with pieces of worn blankets. Then she would knit some cuffs off the yarn and sew them on. These were the mittens Linda wanted to give to the old neighbor. Jane cut out two pairs of old man Riggs, but she left the sewing to Linda. She cut one pair from overalls, but she found an old skirt in the attic, I think the brightest red I'd ever saw, and she cut one pair from this. When they were finished, they went into a box along with some of Jane's molasses cookies. Early on Christmas Eve, before dark, Linda took the box and I left it on Riggs's porch. At 11 o'clock the next morning, my chores were done. I was sitting in the living room while Jane and Linda prepared our Christmas dinner. Suddenly, with a clatter like an earthquake in a tin shop, Old Man Riggs' Model T turned into our drive. He had his usual death grip on the wheel, but on his hands were flaming red mittens. He came to an abrupt halt just in front of the house and climbed painfully to the ground. He further mystified me by lifting a big cardboard grocery bag box from the rear seat. Then he marched right up to the front door and knocked, holding the box under his arm. After the briefest of greetings, he asked for Linda. When she came in from the kitchen, he put his hand into the box and lifted something out. There, beautiful to behold, was the beloved, fabulous blue coat. Linda let out a cry of wild delight, and then, after the manner of womankind, she began to sob. Mr. Riggs put his hand caressingly on her head with a remarkable gentleness. "You know," he said, "I had a little girl just like you once, a long time ago, only her hair was red." He tried to say more, but only his lips moved. A moment later, Jane came in from the kitchen, and piling surprise upon surprise, Old Man Riggs again reached into his box What he handed Jane was a hand-tooled leather bag that must have cost fully as much as the coat. Riggs turned to me. "I hope," he growled. "You won't mind if I give your wife a Christmas present, John." It wasn't just a common courtesy that made me ask Riggs to stay for dinner. The old man began to stammer and make excuses, but Jane would have noticed this. "Nonsense," she chided. "We've got plenty for everyone, and it'll be ready in just a little while." Anyway, she clenched her argument. "I've already set a place for you." Poor though we were, we never went hungry. The farm yielded an abundance of food, and it was nourishing and good, and Jane was a cook who could make a feast out of the plainest fare. There wasn't a turkey, but there was a fat chicken from our flock, as well as the pair of rabbits I had shot the day before, served, of course, with plenty of Jane's good cornbread dressing. We didn't have tea or coffee, but there were cider and milk aplenty. I could tell the old man enjoyed the meal. There was a kind of dreamy look in his eyes. Once he looked at Jane, sort of stammered and remarked, "A man sort of forgets about a woman's way of with food when he lives by himself." After the meal, Riggs sat in the living room with me for a while, smoking a pipe full of my homegrown tobacco. But finally, he put on his coat and started towards the door. "Gotta be about my chores," he explained. Then suddenly he turned to me and said, "You know, John, there's a place down at the end of my field where an old road used to go through. If you fence that off and run your stock down over it, it won't cost you a dime." As he slipped through the door, he waved his red mittens and said, "Merry Christmas, Linda. If you will bring your basket to my house, I'll fill it with some of them pears for your folks."
Visit of the Shepherds, another poem by Mary Carlin. A baby was born in Bethlehem. "Christ the Lord," the angel said. They would see him when they arrived, snugly laid in a manger bed. Excitement ran throughout the camp. "Let us make haste and see this sight. What a blessing we've been given to have a word from God tonight. We will hurry to see him. It is not far. Dogs will tend to the sheep out there. Let me take Blossom, the newborn lamb. She still needs extra loving care." The shepherds hurried to the stable. The inn was just at the edge of town. They knelt when they saw the baby there, the king who would wear a thorny crown. Jesus loves us so much, he came to die, to open a passage to heaven for all. Let us earnestly seek the Lord today, Christ the Lord, from a manger stall.
I hear them say it a lot. "Put your shoes on. We can't go until your shoes are on." The little tykes round up their scattered shoes, and their little hands dutifully pull on those shoes, sometimes on the wrong feet. There are groans and whimpers, and sometimes agitated "I can'ts," but somehow the task is completed, and off they skip into the big world with those little feet protected. It's easy to walk with good shoes on. The thorns and rocks aren't a bother. Little Thatcher had blisters the other day. The day we all camped at Indian Crossing and hiked those 2 miles to Blue Hole. He couldn't wear shoes. His daddy gently wrapped his hurting feet with bandages that worked on the trip up. But after a cold soaking in that Imnaha River, he needed more bandages. That strong daddy carried him and his little sister back down that long, hot, dusty trail. He carries us like that. When the trail is long, hot, and dusty, when our feet are hurting and our shoes just don't work, he takes us to that cold river where we can take off those heavy shoes and soak our tired feet. Then he carries us. He carries us on unknown trails of the new year, new challenges, new griefs, new difficulties, new diagnoses, The eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. Deuteronomy 33:27. He said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. 2 Corinthians 12:9.
Gifts. We were poor, but my folks planned to put us all through church school. When my oldest sister graduated 8th grade and they saw the cost of boarding school, they realized the economic impossibility of educating 5 girls. Daddy chose to give up logging and go to school to earn the money to give his girls a Christian education. So when I was 4, we moved to San Diego, where Daddy took nursing. Then we moved again for anesthesia training in Tennessee. Meanwhile, we were poorer. In California, my folks worked all they could as CNAs, but CNA wages don't go far to pay for schooling, plus providing for a 7-person family that grew to be 9. For 2 years, while Daddy was in nursing school, there wasn't even money for the flannel to sew for the 90s Mama always made for Christmas. We were told there would be no Christmas at our house. One of those Christmases, however, we awoke to find a cardboard box on the porch. It held secondhand things we could enjoy. My favorite was the tiniest porcelain dishes I had ever seen. The plates couldn't have been more than 1.5 inches in diameter. How I loved those tiny dishes we got for Christmas, the year of no Christmas. Christmas gifts. Grandma's sometimes bring strange ones. When she was home, Grandma Hildy would knit us warm mittens. Usually, though, she lived in the Far East with my missionary aunt. Grandma Hazel was another story. We never knew what to expect from her and waited with a type of dread. Her gifts seemed so random. We wondered how we'd be disappointed this year. For example, 1 year we each received 1/2 a dish towel. Half. Sewed with a crocheted loop for hanging on a fridge or oven door. She probably thought we'd like to use our own dish towels to dry dishes at night. But half a dish towel doesn't go far when drying dishes for a family that was by then 10 people. And who wanted to dry dishes anyway? I failed to appreciate that Christmas gift. Still, we never expected expensive gifts from anyone because while other children's parents only needed to buy gifts for 3 or 4 children, ours had to buy for 8. And it was a stretch with so many of us spread through from toddlers through church school, academy, and college. So we slept many a night before Christmas to the sound of my mom's sewing machine creating 90s. As soon as each could understand, every family member gave a simple gift to every other. Often these were homemade things, but Mama taught us to wrap each gift to perfection. When 10 people each give 9 other people a gift, simple as it may be, it made for quite a pile of beautifully wrapped presents under the tree. Then I experienced my first Christmas at my in-laws. What a culture shock. In the first place, no gifts were under the tree at all, and no one seemed to expect them to be. I couldn't imagine what the plan was. The second shock came at seeing Mom Baumgartner enter the living room with common laundry baskets, holding piles of haphazardly wrapped gifts with no ribbons and no tags, and proceed to hand them out from directly from the baskets. Somewhere on the bottom of each package, written lightly in pencil, was the name of the receiver. But sometimes she couldn't find the name and she guessed. That was my third shock. When I had one gift half unwrapped, she suddenly yanked it out of my hands and told me it wasn't for me after all, it was for somebody else in the room. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to handle that Christmas. After the girls and I moved back here about 16 years ago, Grandma Baumgartner became the Grandma Hazel of my children's experience. She was on a really limited income, and they learned they'd each get a pen and tiny tablet or a secondhand wallet each year. One year, she inadvertently failed to get a gift for one of the kids. When she realized it, she started digging through her purse. We watched in awkward silence until finally she brought out for that one a used pen that still had some ink and a partially used tablet. She tore out the used pages. Clearly, the gift of the gift giving of Christmas carries different value to different people. Among my own siblings, some crochet amazing garments while others give copies of the same book or CD. Some make costly purchases while others give gift cards to the same store every year. In our society, gifts often get the most focus at Christmas, but they aren't what's important. I'm troubled by the perceived low value sometimes given to the meaning of Christmas, how little we think of heaven's gift. That gift came to us in the humblest of wrapping jobs. It was such an unassuming gift that few gave it any value at all. I hope each of us finds a way to truly meditate on the worth of the gift of heaven given to us at Christ's birth, and especially to express our gratefulness to him through our generosity or our service to someone who doesn't seem to deserve it any more than we deserve God's indescribable Christmas gift to us. That's what makes Christmas truly happy, regardless of our finances, the number of people with us, the tree's beauty, or the gifts we give or receive. That gift is the only one that truly matters.